That's the late Pino Daniele and Eric Clapton, tune called Napoli. We heard from Iliapu before that, and Thiago El Nino. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you had fun. Stay tuned for Peace and Social Justice with Chris Nelson. I'll see you again next week. Bye-bye. Vote no, please, on the recall. I'll see you next week. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
September day, were you in the yard with your wife and children, or working on some stage in L.A.? Did you stand there in shock at the sight of that black smoke rising against that blue sky? Did you shout out in anger and fear for your neighbor, or did you just sit down and cry? Did you weep for the children who lost their dear loved ones, pray for the ones who don't know? Did you rejoice for the people who walked from the rubble and sob for the ones left below? Did you burst out with pride for the red, white, and blue, and the heroes who died just doing what they do? Did you look up to heaven for some kind of answer, and look at yourself and what really matters? I'm just a singer of simple songs. I'm not a real political man. I watch CNN, but I'm not sure I can tell you the difference in Iraq and Iran. But I know Jesus, and I talk to God, and I remember this from when I was young. Faith, hope, and love are some good things He gave us, and the greatest is love.
All right, you're on the Peace and Justice program. My name is Chris. We're on every Friday with rotating hosts from 11:30 to 1. And I just wanted to say something about that song. That was Alan Jackson. I don't know his music, but I chose the song because a lot of people in his demographic went from love to hate over the last 20 years when that song was recorded. And the most recent Frontline on PBS does a good job of explaining how our country became so divisive. So I just wanted to mention that to you. And I have on the line with me an incredible woman. I want to introduce her first. Her name is Nancy Mencias, and she is a doctoral student in anthropology and social change at the California Institute of Integral Studies. She holds an MBA from Dominican University of California and a BA in drama from San Francisco State. She's worked for over 15 years in the nonprofit sector, focusing on social services, social justice, and theater. She's volunteered and visited the refugee camps in Greece, Kurdistan, Iraq, and provided migrant support on the U.S.-Mexico border. As an anti-war advocate, Mencias has been actively trying to bring the troops home from the overseas misadventures. She has also been part of the movement against torture and a proponent of closing the prison in Guantanamo. She is a Code Pink organizer. Welcome, Nancy Mencias. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much, Chris, for inviting me onto your show.
Yeah, your work is probably the most important in the world. And I woke up this morning just hit by the fact that all of our forest fires release so much carbon into the environment, speeding up climate change. And our topic today is going to be about climate change and militarism. But I'd like you to first, since we're at the anniversary of 9/11, to tell us about Code Pink's founding and what it is now.
Yeah, well, you know, this is a time where a lot of us in the country reflect on the past 20 years. And for us as an organization, we reflect not only on this day coming up, September 11th, but us as an organization and how so many things have changed and triggered the organization to become what it is today. We primarily focused on trying to end the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan 20 years ago, tried to hold people accountable for leading us into the war in Iraq. So there's a lot to reflect on. Over the years, we have taken up different issues in the Middle East and domestically as well, trying to end the wars abroad and bring the money home to use for schools and housing for the homeless folks. And then also, most recently, around climate change and talking about how money could be used for that to combat. You did mention the wildfires, and here in California, it's the fires, climate change is so real, not just here, but all over the world as well. So given this time, this moment in history, we do have quite a bit to reflect on. And for Code Pink, I just want to invite your listeners to join us. Tomorrow we're having a webinar. It's a quite a lengthy webinar with military family members, peace advocates, journalists, even in some folks who are active in the environmental movement. We want to invite you to our webinar that's taking place. So if you go to codepink.org and go to our events page, you can sign up and participate in this very moment, important and reflective webinar that's taking place tomorrow.
Yeah, I hope I'll be able to do that, because it's such an important thing. I've been thinking a lot about 9/11 and, of course, Afghanistan and all the suffering and all the money. And I think many of us are kind of, our minds are going that way. So that webinar is a great idea. Thank you for that. And we wanted to spend our time together talking about the intersections between militarism and climate catastrophe. Can you tell us why you're concerned about the U.S. military and their carbon footprint?
Absolutely. So I just wanted to back up a little bit. Climate change and militarism aren't two separate issues, but part of the same problem. Here in the U.S., we have a history of extraction and violence. And militarism is different for, means something different for everyone, just as climate change means something different for everyone. For militarism, it can encompass military greenhouse gas emissions, the destruction of humanity through nuclear weapons, funding and investing in weapon manufacturers, air contamination brought on by the U.S. military, the toll the planet takes when there is war and conflict, and even military exercises and practices, which some call war games. So war is generally erased, not just from climate agreements. If you look at health regulations and other regulations, the military doesn't have to report on it. There's no accountability, yet as U.S. taxpayers, our money goes to support the military. But there's just no earmarks or ways to check on what is the, where are you at with your gas emissions. You know, even though, you know, we have something like the Green New Deal, it doesn't mention the military environmental impact. We have to take that on as a movement. And that is what this this work is about, that I am engaging in. Why isn't the military? Why aren't these things about environmental impacts included? So what we're going to do is we're going to have an intervention about it, not just here in the U.S., but countries who also are engaged. And why aren't they included? The countries would have to scale back tons of money and military money. This is money that could be used for the environment.
Right. Yeah, and there's over 800 military bases around the world, too. And those greenhouse gases are never accounted for either. They are totally acting with impunity in regards to the climate.
Absolutely, and I'm glad you brought up the topic of military bases, because there's actually 900 plus military bases. I just want to let you know that, Chris, that that number
going
has
up.
increased. And the U.S. is the largest landholder. So there are over 900 plus military bases that we know of across the U.S. And we could look at things as what has happened in the past, the toxicity levels from Agent Orange, the effects of the bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the toxic waste left from military bases. The construction on the bases are extremely harmful to ecosystems. There is a resistance happening across the country. One that comes to mind in particular is Jeju Island, right, which is in the Korean Peninsula. There has been resistance against the construction of a naval base. I'm really happy that you brought up the military bases.
Yeah, I think that the social justice issues are the way that we can connect people with the issues that are involved and kind of connect those dots, because it does affect people all over the world, not just the carbon footprint, but the actual takings of land, the pollution of land. And I'm so glad that you're doing this, and I want you to be able to tell us about this incredible week of activities you have coming up, and then move into talking about the COP. But first, tell us about the week where you are rising up.
Absolutely, and it's happening in a couple of weeks, September 21st on International Peace Day. That week is also called New York Climate Week. In the San Francisco Bay Area, we will have a teach-in at UC Berkeley, which is called War is Killing the Planet. We want to invite your listeners, if you are in the San Francisco Bay Area, to join us. You can go to our website again. And then from there, we will go over and have a peace party outside of Nancy Pelosi's house in San Francisco. So those are your listeners who feel a little bit more daring are welcome to join us, but all that information is on our website. But not just in San Francisco, in New York for Climate Week, we are also having on September 21st, International Peace Day, a walk of shame. We will be walking from the BlackRock headquarters to the UN, going by these different polluters and war profiteers buildings, calling them out, educating the public about what is happening, making that connection between climate change and militarism. Now, for your listeners who may not be familiar with BlackRock, BlackRock is the largest investor in climate chaos and nuclear weapons, as well as weapon manufacturers. So they are a big target of ours. And we are part of BlackRock's big problem, which is a network mostly of environmental groups working to hold BlackRock accountable. You can find more information about BlackRock on our website. Again, what we do in this network is we try to fill in the gaps to talk about militarism, to talk about migrant justice. And we do many things, like have petitions, meetings, and actions. But yeah, that is going to happen
Yeah.
On September 21st.
So I'm speaking with Nancy Mancias. She is with Code Pink. Their website is codepink.org, and you can find out all about any of these actions or the history of them, of these places like Black Rock, on that website. And, you know, Code Pink really stepped up after 9/11 and has become just always with their fingers on the pulse, always at everything in Washington, and continues to do so. So I really appreciate your leadership on this. You are moving next to the COP26 in Glasgow, Scotland. Can you tell us about what you hope to achieve at the climate summit?
Absolutely. So after Climate Week in New York City, all the world leaders will shift their attention to COP26 in Glasgow, Scotland, which is happening the first 2 weeks in November. So as they shift their attention, climate change activists, as well as us peace activists, will be shifting our attention to COP26. And what we hope to accomplish, as I said earlier, militarism, military greenhouse gas emissions are always excluded from these climate talks. So what we hope to do as a community is to bring that topic to COP26, not outside where we'll be protesting, but also to the COP26 People's Forum. We want to highlight this. Why is it the military carbon emissions aren't counted in the climate talks, not just for the U.S., but then also for these NATO countries? And we want to be there in the streets and make those exact connections, working with the Scottish groups. So COP26 is the most important international climate talk since Paris. Every nation will ratchet up its climate commitments made in Paris, and we hope that many corporations will make new climate commitments to the lead-up. But we definitely want to include military greenhouse gas emissions in those talks.
And how can we help you?
Absolutely. Well, for one thing, on September 21st, you can join one of our actions, either in New York or in the San Francisco Bay Area, or you can even organize one in your own community. On November 4th, that is our designated day of action on climate change and militarism at Glasgow, Scotland, outside of a COP26 conference. People can also organize a solidarity action in their community as well. You can also sign our petition that says stop excluding military pollution from climate agreements. That is also located on our website. So those are a few ways to participate in our campaigns.
Yeah, you know, I listened to the webinar, and you were working with people for disarmament in Scotland, and they pointed out the U.S. military bases in Scotland, which are the only ones in Great Britain, and they were saying if Scotland gets independence, they will kick the U.S. out. So that was pretty interesting.
That is very interesting. Yeah, so it's going to be exciting.
Yes.
plan to be there at COP26, and I know some of our friends and allies at Friends of the Earth and Greenpeace are asking the UK government to cancel the COP26, but I don't think it's going to happen. I believe the British ruling class are going to go ahead and move forward with it, and but it'll just give us an opportunity to call them out on their greenwashing.
Mm-hmm. And why would it be canceled? Is it from COVID or some other reason?
There's a different reason as to why the environmental groups are asking to cancel, and it has to do with equity, equality. The UK has very strict guidelines for people from the global south to enter the country. And as we know, there is vaccination apartheid, so it makes it really difficult from people like from Ecuador or Brazil, places where, that are directly impacted by climate change, it makes it difficult for them to actually travel to COP26 because of the really strict standards. And since there is this inequality, how can COP26 move forward collectively and make decisions about climate change and the Global South without actually having people from the Global South in the room and at the table to help make those decisions? So I understand this is a really big step and a really good big push to ask the UK to cancel it, but I just don't think they're going to do it. So, but you know, it's a matter of wait and see. We do have 2 months leading up to COP26, so things are shifting and changing every day.
So that's absolutely important. I'm glad you brought that up. After that, I'd like to know about the status of the Green New Deal here in the United States and Biden's commitment. I know he is all about restoring refineries. He hasn't done anything to stop the Enbridge pipeline across Minnesota. What is your take on him and whether or not we'll be able to get a Green New Deal?
Yeah, it's really frustrating. As you probably saw from the climate and militarism webinar, Biden proposed sending $1.2 billion of climate aid to poor countries. I think he's referring to the Global South, and $14 billion on climate in the U.S. $200 billion have been handed out annually in fossil fuel subsidies, never mind that $1,250 billion is spent on war or preparation for war. So it's not looking good, and it is very discouraging, and it's discouraging to know that he does support the Enbridge pipeline that is going through northern Minnesota. But we just, as we enter into the fall, actions will be heating up, pressure will be heating up. We know John Kerry will be at the COP26. He is the climate representative for the United States. So we just got to keep applying pressure, making sure that indigenous voices are out and front and center talking about the issues around climate change.
Well, Nancy Mencias, I appreciate all of your work. Again, the website is codepink.org. And I just want to announce one more thing is the way I met you was at the Clark County Jail when we were arrested for a Shutdown Creech action. Shutdown Creech is a peaceful way to stop U.S. drone wars. It's a national mobilization. It is September 26th to October 2nd. It's co-sponsored by Veterans for Peace and Code Pink, and it will be a peace convergence in the Nevada desert north of Las Vegas. This is a growing campaign to stop U.S. drone terror by challenging lies and misinformation and appealing to the consciences of Creech drone-based personnel, as well as nonviolently shutting down Creech Air Force Base. Any reflections on that, Nancy Mencias, before I let you go?
Yeah, just tying that into the environment, just up the street from Creech Air Force Base is the Nevada test site, which has high levels of toxicity, radiation, and has really damaged the Shoshone Nation's land. So, yeah, just another piece of that is the environmental destruction that the base and the Nevada test site have brought to that area.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time today. I do have about a minute left. Do you want to repeat any part of this that seems like the most critical thing for our listeners?
The most critical part that I'd like to repeat is, you know, militarism comes in different forms for everyone, but it is crucial for the climate change movement and the peace movement to come together and fight global dominance for a better planet and for humanity.
Thank you for being with me on the Peace and Justice program today. I wish you much power. Take care.
Thank you.
All right, bye.
Bye.
All right, so here we are at the Peace and Justice program, and I have a brief minute here. I wanted to let you know that I'm not sure where we are on the weeks here. They kind of run together for me, but a man was killed at Tigard Ponds here in Chico by teenagers with guns last week. It was a Saturday. And so far we don't know anything about the investigation, but we do know that our city has not stepped up to voice any kind of concern about the escalating hate crimes in our community. Many unhoused people will tell you about being hit with paintballs or otherwise attacked by people. And just today, one of our city council people was on another radio station talking about being held hostage by the lawsuit, which just to go back on this lawsuit, Boise versus Martin, had to do with criminalizing homeless, that homeless are human beings, they have bodies, and they have to be able to put their bodies somewhere. And in this lawsuit, it's illegal for the city of Chico to not allow them to have their basic functioning, which includes sleep and actually being somewhere. And so the judge has required the city to try to make some sort of accommodations for unhoused people. This city councilman was saying that, you know, a Holiday Inn. They're asking for a Holiday Inn. But what was the most alarming part of this, of hearing this, was the fact that the announcer called it terrorism, the lawsuit as terrorism, and being held hostage by terrorists. And this doesn't help the discussion. We had a man killed this week by young people who heard this kind of language because they were shouting epithets that many, many people heard right before they opened fire on two men. One man's still in the hospital, but the other man died. And so what is important, I think, at this point, especially looking back at 9/11 and how our country has devolved from love right after the 9/11 attacks and some semblance of unity to a place of extreme division and divisiveness and brutal name-calling and scapegoating. We're at a precipice here where physical violence may escalate. So it's really all of us that has to rein in our anger, our frustration, our irritability, and we all feel it. We are all feeling it. So I hope that, you know, my words aren't so preachy that you can't hear them, but I think it's really, really important. And it's very stressful times, and I acknowledge that. And I send out a big embrace to all of you who are suffering because of all the pressures on us, because of fire, COVID, the 9/11 anniversary, the hatred in the community, the hate crimes, all of it. Anyway, I also should say the opinions voiced on the program do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, or underwriters. And then I realized I didn't put my CD in before this, so now we don't have any music to play for you. So, my friends, let me go back and restart with this Alan Jackson fellow and see if I can get back to that. Replay, and we'll hear him out again. I think it was a pretty good song, I thought. Let's see, how do I get back there? Here we go. All right, peace to y'all. Here we go.
that September day. Were you in the yard with your wife and children, or working on some stage in L.A.? Did you stand there in shock at the sight of that black smoke rising against that blue sky? Did you shout out in anger and fear for your neighbor, or did you just sit down and cry? Did you weep for the children who lost their dear loved ones, pray for the ones who don't know? Did you rejoice for the people who walked from the rubble and sob for the ones left below? Did you burst out with pride for the red, white, and blue, and the heroes who died just doing what they do? Did you look up to heaven for some kind of answer, and look at yourself and what really matters? I'm just a singer of simple songs. I'm not a real political man. I watch CNN, but I'm not sure I can tell you the difference in Iraq and Iran. But I know Jesus, and I talk to God, and I remember this from when I was young. Faith, hope, and love are some good things He gave us, and the greatest is love.
Hi, greatest is love. This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. It is 12:01. This is Chris on the Peace and Justice program. We're here every Friday. We are followed by Playing Dead, so at 1 o'clock, you can really start your Friday, okay? And kick back and get some R&R. I would like to thank our underwriters as well as all of our supporters. Chico Natural Foods Cooperative first, offering a variety of organic and local produce, organic groceries, and supplements. The co-op has hot food, ready-to-eat sandwiches, and cold brew coffee. The co-op now accepts online orders for curbside pickup. Chico Natural Foods Co-op, open every day on the corner of 8th and Main in downtown Chico. Also want to let you know about Chico Performances presenting Seven Things I've Learned with Ira Glass, host and creator of This American Life, on Saturday, September 25th at Laxon Auditorium. Ira Glass and This American Life have won the highest honors for broadcasting and journalistic excellence, including 7 Peabody Awards and the first Pulitzer Prize ever awarded for audio journalism. Tickets at the University Box Office at 898-633 or at chicoperformances.com. Also want to tell you about the Northern California Autism Symposium, which is returning Friday, September 24th to Chico State. Presenters will share the latest interventions, services, and supports available for individuals with autism spectrum disorder and their families. Information and registration at ncas.csuchico.edu. Also want to thank Drunken Dumplin' in Chico. First created as a food cart, Drunken Dumplin' is now a dine-in restaurant serving locally sourced, fresh, handmade Asian fusion comfort food at 1414 Park Avenue, Suite 120, just behind Nobby's. Open 11 to 9. Details on Facebook, Instagram, and at DrunkenDumplingChico.com. Drunken Dumpling, where they love food, flavor, and our community. Yay! So, let's go on, and I'm going to get my next guest on the line. Let's have a little rousing No War music here from Emma's Revolution.
I will not fight. I will not take orders. My life is short and getting shorter. This is not my land. I don't belong here. This is not my war. This is not my war. When I was young, I would play the hero. My chance for real, next to zero. I grew up poor, and I grew up empty. Recruiters came, tried to tempt me. They promised cars, and they promised money. They showed my future bright and sunny. Though it sounded good, I did not believe them. I had a friend, they deceived him. I will not fight, I will not take orders. My life is short, getting shorter. This is not my land, I don't belong here. This is not my war, this is not my war. My buddy Juan joined the army. He was convinced he would help his family. He tried his best to buy the story, but bloody lies betrayed the glory. Juan wrote to me from a bar in Baghdad. He helped me see the power that I had. There is no war without the warrior, just silent.
All right. I was talking about, obviously, individual responsibility in war, something that from the 60s we were very much aware of because of Buffy St. Marie's song, The Universal Soldier. And I am very grateful to have on the line with me Nandi Sojourner Crosby, a proud Baltimore native. She joined the faculty of Chico State in the fall of 1999, earned a BA in psychology from St. Mary's College in Southern Maryland, an MA in Africana Women's Studies from Clark Atlanta University, and a PhD in sociology from Georgia State University. She holds a joint appointment in sociology and multicultural and gender studies with specific interests in all things related to social inequality. Poverty, gang violence, police brutality, feminist theory, systemic racism and sexism, gender politics, transgender visibility, and a host of other social justice issues. Nandi Crosby has taught more than 20 classes at Chico State in areas ranging from multicultural studies, African American studies, feminist theory, gangs, gender, sexuality, and criminology. She's earned the university's prestigious Outstanding Teacher Award in the 2015-16 academic years and began serving as a chair of the sociology department in summer of 2016. She's also the author of This Side of My Struggle, an anthology collected of heart-wrenching firsthand accounts of prisoners. And so this is a 360-degree exploration of thoughts, emotions, and graphic experiences of people condemned to live and die in America's harshest environments. Welcome to the Peace and Justice Show, Nandi Crosby.
Okay, thank you, Chris. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and you have obviously been doing a lot of teaching in your life, and I thought maybe we could just start off talking a little bit about teaching in this time of COVID. I have no idea what's happening at Chico State in terms of what it's like for teachers and students. So can you just give us an idea of your teaching environment right now?
Sure. So every person at the university is required to certify that they've been vaccinated by September 30th. So students, staff, and faculty, or at least demonstrate that they have a medical exemption or that it goes against their religious principles and so forth. So most of our courses are still online. There are a few of us who are teaching on campus, and so I have one of my four classes on campus, and it's just Wednesday. It's a prison industrial complex class. It's a three-hour course. So for me, the biggest challenge is just talking for 3 hours with a mask on. I'm not going to take the mask off. I am a masker, but just in terms of challenge and breathing, that's the extent of it for me. I think that, you know, most of the students have either developed a sense of taking online classes and that this is just
kind of how things are going to go for this semester, but my understanding is that a lot of them are a little exhausted by the online modality, and so being back in the classroom has been refreshing and exciting, and I have not seen or heard anything where the students are challenged by the mask wearing, so I think it's okay.
Yeah, I do too. I just had a little discussion with someone in a business regarding how I wish that they would ask their customers to wear masks so older people like myself could feel safer inside. Mm-hmm. But right. I know the tensions around mask wearing and vaccinations. How does this apply to some of the issues of social inequality that you teach about? Are the students able to engage in terms of the complexity of the times that we're in and the topics that you're covering? Say the prison industrial complex, you know, who shows up at these classes and why are they taking it and how does it relate to their lives?
I'm not sure I understand specifically the question. Are you asking about students who take give me that question again.
Well, unfortunately, I asked too many questions at once. So let's boil it down to the fact that I'm concerned about the students and how they are receiving information. On one level, they are they're being compliant with mask wearing and they're doing what they need to do to just focus on their education. So you have a subset of students that are taking a class on the prison industrial complex, which I'm grateful for your students for being there because it's such an important topic. And I was wondering if there is any way that you can kind of define or talk about your students and why they are who they are and why they take the classes they take, because obviously the classes you teach are will raise consciousness, critical thinking, and knowledge about some of our toughest social problems.
Yeah. So, you know, I can't speak to the Chico State student body because I don't know, you know, who the students are who are on campus versus the students online. Mm-hmm. I know the students in my prison industrial complex class, it is a course that's cross-listed between sociology and multicultural and gender studies. Mm. And so the students tend to be either SOCH or MCGS majors or minors. The sociology program, we have a component of it that is a strictly distance ed program. And so many of my online students are signed up through that program. The topic itself, I think a lot of people are attracted to the topic of the prison industrial complex because, well, the times we live in, there's a lot of conversation about prison abolition. There is a ton of conversation around police brutality and profiling and the disproportionate number of people of color who are incarcerated. And so I think the topic itself has gained a lot of traction just in the last couple of years. I developed the course for the university about 3 years ago, and this is the second time that I've taught it. It's going to be offered every four semesters, I believe. So my sense is that the students who have enrolled previously and this go-round are ones who are legitimately interested in the various ways in which between their tax dollars, their family members, and their own voting choices are connected to things like prison industry and social inequality, particularly with regard to people of color, queer people, and poor people who are wrapped up in the prison industrial complex.
Yeah, excellent. I know that Michelle Alexander, I think, is the person that started the real drill down into this subject with her book, The New Jim Crow, and that was at least 10 years ago. And she since then, it's really been wonderful. There are podcasts coming out of San Quentin, you know, Ear Hustle mm-hmm. and other things mm-hmm. like that. And so much has been, Brian Stevenson, mm-hmm. you know, the book In Common that we had, and he came to Chico State. And I was wondering, do you see any major changes in the prison industrial complex as a result of the rising consciousness and focus on it?
Well, it's hard to say about whether there have been changes. I haven't seen any changes. That's not true. You know, there have been some, I think here in California, the governor decided that we were going to, you know, pull away from from private prisons. I don't feel well versed on that per se, as much as I do about the rising consciousness around the issues connected to prison industry and the idea that, you know, corporations profiting from human suffering is problematic. And there have been, you know, the largest private prison company in the United States has changed its name, and when you go on its web, it used to be Corrections Corporation of America. I forget what they're calling themselves now, but about a year ago they decided they're going to rebrand themselves. And so they've rebranded as a company that really supports rehabilitation and getting people back into the community. But you know, you scroll down and you can still check out their stock numbers for the day. I think the term itself, prison industrial complex, is something that is becoming much more well known. People are not certain of all of the ways, whether it is through the vending machines or the ankle bracelets or the ankle monitors. I don't think a lot of people are aware about the extent to which the industrial part of that system is an integral part of our society, mm-hmm. but people definitely understand a little bit more and recognize that it's problematic that you're making money off of human suffering.
Right. People are entrapped in that system and cannot escape, you know, much beyond, you know, from everything from bail and, you know, like
exactly.
you mentioned, all the stuff, all the many, many things they do to people. One of the bills that I am kind of surprised is on the governor's desk, because it's so forward thinking, is a bill that would make it harder for prosecutors to charge defendants with sentence enhancements for belonging to criminal street gangs. And I know we're not going to talk about anything specifically in terms of that bill. I have no idea what's in that bill, but you do teach about gang violence, and what are your thoughts about gangs? Because it's one of the many misunderstood aspects of our society in terms of how marginalized people have to survive.
Yeah. I don't know that I accept the idea that it's about marginalized people having to survive, but that has more to do with my own personal beliefs about personal accountability and choices and so forth.
Thank you.
But I, you know, I think one thing that some people may not understand about gangs is that it's largely young people, and it's largely, you know, gang membership is largely about people who are very young. By the time they hit, you know, their early 20s, mid-20s, you know, people tend to make different decisions. I do see it, you know, as a sociologist, I tend to look at the ways in which our environment helps to influence our ways of thinking, our behavior, and our relationships to other people. And so we notice that in urban areas, in high impoverished areas, we see a lot more gang membership. But I think that the image of gangsters or who gang members might be that gets promoted through mass media is a little bit different from who actual gang members are. You know, they tend to be 16, 17-year-old kids
who are seeking a family connection with other people. They tend to have to be disconnected or troubled in their home life, and they tend overwhelmingly to be seeking connections outside of their homes. And so how that tends to look is, you know, somebody will say, if you want to be part of this group, you have to do X. And X tends to be some type of criminal behavior. And so, you know, we've talked a lot about gangs and crime being connected because, yeah, the typical definition is people who are involved. I think the state or the federal definition tends to be two or three or more people who have a shared identity and, you know, engage in criminal behavior for the promotion or connected to that particular identity or something. I forget exactly how they tend to define it. But I think a lot of people are just not aware that it's mostly young people seeking human connection.
Thank you. I have on the line with me Nandi Crosby. She is a professor at CSUC Chico in sociology and multicultural and gender studies, as well as a chair of the sociology department. So one of the things that when you spoke, my mind was racing ahead and thinking about the language that young people hear and how it can lead to violence in a susceptible mind. And I don't know if you address that in your classes about how people act on things that they think they feel, or, you know, they're feeling something strong because they're young, their amygdalas are huge, and they, you know, they act out very physically. And then they commit a crime, you know, and they're not even an adult yet. Can you speak at all about hate crimes and language?
I don't do much on hate crimes, either in my research or my reading or my teaching. I also tend not to unpack the age issue, except in the gangs class. Okay. In terms of hate crimes, are you asking specifically about the hate crimes that young people commit? Is that what you're?
Yeah, I'm seeing perpetrators as victims in a lot of cases because they commit crimes based on, I guess we would call it passion, but it is misinformation, like the Marine who went to the pizza parlor in Washington, D.C. because he was led by Trump supporters to think that there was a sex ring in the basement and they were, you know, doing things to children. And, you know, he went all the way there. He was going to kill people because he was so upset about what he thought was happening. And he was an adult. But, you know, people get so thrown asunder by their understandings of things, you know. And I mean, the same can be said about racism. I mean, it's toxic. It's viral. It forms out of fear and otherness, I guess you would say.
Right.
Do you care to speak about that?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I wanted to hear what you had to say. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I think for me it's not even an age-specific thing, particularly in the age of Trump. I listen to people of every age group, and I don't want to alienate any of your listeners, but just I was quite disappointed to learn the extent to which people are willing to accept not just misinformation and not just negative information, but toxic information about other people who are their neighbors, people who are in their families. And, you know, the idea that if you don't support a particular way of thinking, then you are the enemy, or you must be fake news, or, you know, there was a lot of a lot of disconnect, I think. I mean, there has been for a very, very, very long time. It just became very prominent during the last presidency. And I don't know what the numbers are that might suggest that the hate crimes were on the rise, certainly toward Asian Americans, I'm aware, yes. But there's just something about all forms of isms. You know, when people are alienated, when people are othered, like you mentioned, that, you know, we tend to create a narrative that says, and this both on the individual level and on the group level and on the national level, that says, if you are not like me, if you don't think like me, if you don't look like me, if you don't behave as I do, then somehow your way of speaking, of looking, of doing, of showing up is problematic. It's uncomfortable. And we don't have a lot of space that says it's okay for you to be different. And I know I'm speaking in very general terms, but let's just take race, for example. You know, I've heard people say during the age, post-civil rights, when people were saying, you know, we're all the same, I don't see color, I'm colorblind, God sees us all the same, I wasn't raised like that. It was as if that is the high road to take. Now, we are now in an era where we know it's problematic to imply that we're all the same. I mean, a lot of people may still, you know, go with the colorblind notion of difference, that it's problematic to see people as different because that would imply that you are racist or sexist or heterosexist or something, if you acknowledge even the very acknowledgement that people are different. And that is real problematic to me. And I think that we are now hitting a place where we recognize that being different is okay, and that we can celebrate in our difference. We're using terms like diversity and inclusion more frequently now. People are identifying themselves with regard to their gender pronouns. You know, we have Hispanic, Latino Heritage Month. I mean, there are all these ways that we are saying it's okay to be different. But I do wonder about the extent to which it's the failure to acknowledge and celebrate those differences that leads to somehow the idea that we are the same, should be the same, mm-hmm. should believe the same, should act the same, should dress the same. And then when you don't, then people tend to target you or have assumptions about you, your difference being problematic or less than.
Thank you so much for that. I think that's helpful because this is this issue has become very important, I think, to all of us trying to understand our divisions and, you know, how to just crack it over and open and think about it. So, Dr. Nandi Crosby, thank you for being my guest on the Peace and Justice program today. I appreciate
Absolutely.
You very much. Bye-bye.
Absolutely a joy. Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, so we have one more guest for the Peace and Justice program for today, and I'm so grateful always to do this show and to be able to bring you these wonderful people. The artist that I'm going to put on while we prepare for our next guest is Emily Barker from her CD, A Dark Murmuration of Words.
The world a place easier for me. Money in my pockets over centuries. I'm a celebrated sinner with statues in the park. This world I made is harder the more your skin is dark. I covered all my tracks and books on history, justified my actions through anthropology. I chose what to remember and what we should forget. I covered all my tracks in your blood and sweat. This machine runs on its own.
Cut the brakes, drop the wheel.
This machine runs on its own. Since 1865, everyone is free, but I still still get my labor complimentary. Who is working in the prisons now? Look and you will see that in 1865 I disguise slavery. This machine runs on its own.
Cut the brakes, stop the wheel.
This machine runs on its own.
Trip the wire, let the steel.
This machine runs on its own. But a crack has appeared. Keeps me up at night. There are whispers, there are shouts, and I fear the wolf will bite. I've been a bully and a sinner. Now I'm on the way out. For the world I made is harder the more your skin is dark. This machine runs on its own.
Cut the brakes, drop the wheel.
This machine runs on its own. On its own.
Cut the brakes, drop the wheel.
This machine runs on its own.
All right, where are those brakes, folks? We got to find them brakes. This is Chris. The show is called Peace and Justice, and I have a friend in the studio. I'm so happy. My second friend in the studio since COVID began, and his name is Jeffrey Gottsman, and he is an activist. Surprise, surprise. He's a board member of the Peace and Justice Center of Nevada County. He's protested and organized against militarism and imperialism since 1969, including a decade at Occupy Beale Air Force Base. He worked on Bernie Sanders' campaigns from 1981 in Burlington, Bernie Sanders' campaigns from 1981 to 2020, from the time Bernie was in Burlington, Vermont, and the mayor up to when he ran for president. He taught at the Contra Costa College near Richmond, California, and is a protest singer and songwriter alone and with the Justice for the Peace band. And today, he's going to be singing for us, so we're going to have a little more lightness than what we're used to here on the Peace and Justice program with all of our intensity. But these songs are excellent. They're very fun. And I wanted to say that when you're doing a two-hour vigil, it is so helpful to have the music, to be able to sing along, to be able to hear the lyrics of new things that Jeffrey's put together, and really, really helps us at Beale Air Force Base. And I wanted to ask you first, Jeffrey, before we start with the song, you're all poised with your fingers over the over the strings. Tell us about your involvement with Beale and why you started and why you continue with that.
Well, I've been doing it for so long that I can hardly remember why I started. But I think that that the most important thing for me is that every day when we set up at Beale to do this vigil, that probably thousands of Air Force people and contractors go past us, and they see what we're doing, and they get the message, and that may be the only place that they find out about the about what the results are of their work. And you know, as I'm sure your listeners know, that at Beale they are flying drones over the Middle East and picking out targets for assassination.
Yes, and we have been there in all weather, you know, all times of years. We go once a month, and of course, you, the listeners, are invited to join us this month. We'll be there at 3 p.m. on September 21st at the Wheatland Gate, and you can get more information on the KZFR website on the Peace and Justice program. I'll post that for you. And we really welcome you to come down to Beale and to join us. And I was wondering, too, about your sense of our success. It's very hard to measure, but there used to be a time when we got a lot of this, and then we got a lot of this. So what is... What are your thoughts?
So I'm assuming your listeners didn't see how many fingers you were holding up there. But but my sense is that people are a lot more friendly. I think a lot of people who work there are really just doing it as a vocational option because it's sort of the draft for working people who can't afford to go to college otherwise. And I think that I think we're making an impact. It's hard to know for sure, but I know that when things get tough, and on days like January 6th of this year, it's kind of nice to know that you have some friends in the armed services.
Mm. And you have friends in the peace community, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I wanted you to go ahead, and we have a number of songs of yours. Have you written all the songs you're going to sing for
us today? I've either written them or adapted them.
They're all, yeah. Okay. So they've all been monkeyed with by mm-hmm. you. Okay. So can you start off with this one, Crown Thy Good, and maybe we'll talk about it a little after. Go ahead.
How's the balance on this? Can you hear me?
Both are good.
Crown thy good with brotherhood from sea to shining sea. I want to crown thy good with brotherhood from sea to shining sea. War is hell. Our own kids die. It's a crazy leap. $1 trillion to contractors. War sure ain't cheap. So how do you get the citizens to agree to go to war? You scare the bejesus out of us so we can't think no more. Drone flights up in foreign skies, dropping waves of pain. Purple mountains, majesties above bomb cratered plains. Third world, uranium waste on thee. And grab thy goods with 1,000 bases from sea to shining sea. First invent an enemy for all of us to fear. Then weapons makers hire TV to reach the nation's ears. If all of that still doesn't fly, there's one more ruse to use. Stage a terror attack on our own soil to anger and confuse, like 20 years ago. Drone flights up in foreign skies, dropping waves of pain. Purple mountains, majesties above bomb cratered plains. Third world, uranium waste on thee. And grab thy goods with 1,000 bases from sea to shining sea. The Maine, the Lusitania, Hawaiian Islands too, Grenada and the Tonkin Gulf, just to name a few. History's since bared the truth, too late to save those lives. But now we know, so you can bet next time we won't buy that jive, we hope. Drone flights up in foreign skies, dropping waves of pain. Purple mountains, majesties above bomb cratered plains. Third world, uranium waste on thee. And grab thy goods with 1,000 bases from sea to shining sea. Crown thy good with brotherhood from sea to shining sea. Why can't we crown thy good with brotherhood from sea to shining sea? I want us to crown thy good with brotherhood from sea to shining sea.
Yay, thank you. That was good. I don't think we should even stop. We should just barrel right through because I don't want to run out of time. And if they're all as good as this first one, I want to hear them all.
Okay. Well, I heard one of your themes for today was the environment and militarism. And,
yes.
So soldiers, where shall we send thee? Why do we send thee? Iran in 53, Mossadegh opposed the oil companies, so we sent the, so we put the Shah on the peacock seat. Iran in 53, prophets can't raise the dead from the soil, no more soldiers, blood for oil. Soldiers, where shall we send thee? Why do we send thee? Congo in 60, Lumumba tamed the mineral company, so we sent Mobutu on a killing spree. Congo in 60, Iran in 1953, prophets can't raise the dead from the soil, no more soldiers, blood for oil. Soldiers, where shall we send thee? Why do we send thee? Vietnam in 64, discovered oil on the ocean floor, staged Gulf of Tonkin to start a war. Vietnam in 64, Congo in 60, Iran in 1953, prophets can't raise the dead from the soil, no more soldiers, blood for oil. Soldiers, where shall we send thee? Why do we send thee? Afghanistan in 01, Unocal's pipeline had to run, so heroin replaced the Taliban. Afghanistan in 01, Vietnam in 64, Congo in 60, Iran in 1953, prophets can't raise the dead from the soil, no more soldiers, blood for oil. Soldiers, where shall we send thee? Why do we send thee? Iraq in 03, Saddam went down for oil, you see, another pipeline cleared for corporate greed. Iraq in 03, Afghanistan in 01, Vietnam in 64, Congo in 60, Iran in 1953, prophets can't raise the dead from the soil, no more soldiers, blood for oil. Soldiers, where shall we send thee? Why do we send thee? Libya in 11, Gaddafi kept the oil for the Libyans, now he's gonna pay for his sins. Libya in 11, Iraq in 03, Afghanistan in 01, Vietnam in 64, Congo in 60, Iran in 53, prophets can't raise the dead from the soil, no more soldiers, blood for oil. Soldiers, where shall we send thee? Why do we send thee? Syria in 14, Orwell's ally A and enemy B. Watch the oil, not the heads on the TV screen. Syria in 14, Libya in 11, Iraq in 03, Afghanistan in 01, Vietnam in 64, Congo in 60, Iran in 1953. Prophets can't raise the dead from the soil, no more soldiers, blood for oil. Prophets can't raise the dead from the soil, no more soldiers, blood for oil.
Yeah. Wow. That, I don't know how you do that. I'd be so tongue-tied. That's great. We're listening to Jeffrey Gotsman. He is an activist and musician, obviously, who singer, songwriter, and tinkerer of other songs. thank you for that one. And next up is Can't Afford to Stay Depressed. I don't think I've heard that before.
We need that one.
We need that.
Stay upbeat, right?
Yeah, we need that. Please.
How can I talk about President Trump without getting you depressed? Here's a little tip I'd like to get off of my chest. Democracy's a vision for the future, not a right we now possess. And overcoming greed and evil's a long time process. Can't afford to stay depressed. Can't afford to stay depressed. Most decent folks are horrified to think that neocons would blow up skyscrapers to make their case for phony wars, overturn the Bill of Rights, imprison whistleblowers in the clink by sending senators who object a letter filled with anthrax spores. How can I talk about false flag terror without getting you depressed? Here's a little tip I'd like to get off of my chest. Democracy's a vision for the future, not a right we now possess. And overcoming greed and evil's a long time process. Can't afford to stay depressed. Can't afford to stay depressed. So when the next right-wing conspiracy sees the light of day, I'll thank the goddess that another nefarious plan's been exposed, and we're one step closer to hearing the sleepy citizens say, time to stand up to the empire. We are tired of being hosed. How can I talk about deep state crimes without getting you depressed? Here's a little tip I'd like to get off of my chest. Democracy's a vision for the future, not a right we now possess. And overcoming greed and evil's a long-time process. Can't afford to stay depressed. Can't afford to stay depressed. Is that upbeat enough yet? The world is big and beautiful, and potential for transformation abounds. But so don't give up hope, because to save the world, we need your spirit round. So feel the disappointment deeply, then move on to the change. Dedicate the rest of your life to staying engaged. And talking about the long road ahead without getting depressed. Here's a little tip I'd like to get off of my chest. Democracy's a vision for the future, not a right we now possess. And overcoming greed and evil's a long-time process. Can't afford to stay depressed.
Oh, that one's the best ever. I love that. Thank you, Jeffrey Gosson. Thank you. And you have not made a CD or gone out in the world.
Well, I made one, but I'm not sure what to do with it.
Yeah, a book like that. Oh, gosh. But then we get back to Blood for Oil.
Yeah, that was the one that I sang about the various interventions.
Oh, okay. Got that one.
You know, that song you played at the beginning of the show was very interesting.
I know.
The guy Jackson who sang that.
Yeah.
This song's kind of my response to that.
Okay. Yeah, the Jesus part. Good. Nominating Jesus for president.
Yeah, this is nominating Jesus for president. He bore a cross of love, though his back was bent. Turned the other cheek, no time to resent. Told the money changers to forgive what they'd lent. Exalted the poor who couldn't pay their rent. That's why I'm nominating Jesus for president. God's gift to the common folks, heaven sent. Nominating Jesus for president. I want to work for him in his campaign tent. Donated loaves and fishes wherever he went. Told the Pharisees they won't see heaven unless they repent. Brought the gospel to the needy, though till his life was spent. Love even thine enemies, that's what he meant. Persecuted and spied on, he refused to relent. That's why I'm nominating Jesus for president. God's gift to the common folks, heaven sent. That's why I'm nominating Jesus for president. I want to work for him in his campaign tent. He wouldn't fly no drones. He'd fight with love alone. He wouldn't tap our phones or foreclose our homes. He wouldn't drop no bombs. Instead, he'd send 'em alms. And Jesus for president.
Yay. I think that one's my favorite. Each one you sing, I go, oh no, that one's my favorite. That's really good. Yeah. So, you know, I I just really appreciate this. Now, do you just sit down and write these, like, off your... You get a spark, and then you write, or how does that work? I don't never did that.
Well, at my age, it's easy to write them, and it's really hard to memorize them.
I get that.
Yeah, it's mostly in response to something. A couple days ago, I wrote a song that's not really ready for prime time yet, but it's about the Desolation Wilderness, one of the places that I love best in the world, and the tragedy of its being burnt out in the Calder Fire.
Well, it's mainly granite and lakes, so I think it'll come back pretty well.
I hope so.
I hope so, too. I do, too. I love it there, too.
Yeah.
So you have a song called Livin'. What's that one?
That's kind of autobiographical.
Okay.
And... My front yard, daughter singing Viginato with her headphones on, reading a mystery, getting some rest, awaiting results from the tumor marker test. Living's what we're doing while we're waiting for the shoe to drop. Living's what we're doing while we're waiting for the shoe to drop. Making arepas, gordo and round. Cook 'em on a wood fire. Hey, what's that sound? U.S. paramilitary thugs trying to scare us off our land so they can grow some drugs. Living's what we're doing while we're waiting for the shoe to drop. Living's what we're doing while we're waiting for the shoe to drop. Making beds by day for minimum wage. In school at night, trying to keep up my grades. Kid's birthday's tomorrow, gonna fix something nice. Hope my husband's not picked up by the ice. Living's what we're doing while we're waiting for the shoe to drop. Living's what we're doing while we're waiting for the shoe to drop. Me and my donkey out harvesting grains, on the lookout for signs and rain. Shadow of a hawk, shadow of a hawk flies over our house. Hope it's not a drone here to take us out. Living's what we're doing while we're waiting for the shoe to drop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one's different. That one, I hadn't heard that before. Interesting. Thank you. And we have time for one more. I'm with Jeffrey Gotsman. I want you to stay tuned for Playing Dead at 1 o'clock. But for now, we have time for one more song. It sounds intriguing, When Jim Jones Came to Tulsa.
Okay. Ooh. That's a little comic relief.
Okay. Could be anything. Okay.
You know, I just want to stress that the Peace and Justice Center of Nevada County and the... And occupy Beale Air Force Base is a nonpartisan organization, and that we give it to both sides.
Okay, get it.
Well, you know, I also should say that for anybody who's listening, if they're under 50, you probably don't know who Jim Jones was, but he was a cult leader who got his followers to go to Guyana in South, British Guyana, I believe, in South America and drink the Kool-Aid. And that was the end of them.
Because of their paranoia. Yeah. Yes.
When Jim Jones came to Tulsa, followed by his flock, said to hell with the city fathers, this rally's gonna really, really rock. Things are gonna be great again, just like in the past, but there's Clorox in the Kool-Aid, and this trip might be your last. When Woody Guthrie played Tulsa, a man was heard to say, we use your songs for toilet paper here in Oklahoma. Woody replied, some folks can't absorb knowledge any other way. But since the run on toilet paper, knowledge don't mean too much today. When Jim Jones came to Tulsa, followed by his flock, he said, to hell with the city fathers, this rally's gonna really, really rock. Things are gonna be great again, just like in the past, but there's Clorox in the Kool-Aid, and this trip might be your last. Herman Cain. And as for why Jim did it, we can only theorize. Reenact the Tulsa Massacre, but this time with the victims white. More likely he was just tired of playing president, so he's killing off his devotees for they vote for him again. When Jim Jones came to Tulsa, followed by his flock, he said, to hell with the city fathers, this rally's gonna really, really rock. Things are gonna be great again, just like in the past, but there's Clorox in the Kool-Aid, and this trip might be your last. I said, there's Clorox in the Kool-Aid, and this trip might be your last.
So, how do you follow that up? Jeffrey Gotsman from Nevada City, thank you so much. Or Grass Valley, I should say. I think that's right. So, last words. I have to clear you out of the studio with your guitar. What would you like the people of this catchment area, our listeners, to know in order to change their lives and make a better world? Last 25 words or less.
Okay. I think that this is such an important moment with the 20th anniversary of 9/11, with the end of the our involvement in the Afghan war, and with climate change. And I think that it's really important for us to think broadly and think about, like, for instance, why were we in Afghanistan in the first place? You know, why did we fund the Mujahideen to overthrow a secular government where women had rights? And the idea of U.S. imperialism and using third world nations, whether it's Ecuador, Bolivia, Venezuela, as Nicaragua's pawns to try to have global domination, and using the byproduct being war that feeds the coffers of the military industrial complex. So think big.
Coming to the end of another Peace and Justice program, I want to thank all of you for staying with us for this great program we had today. And I'd like to thank our underwriters, in this case, Pullen Cyclery, providing self-propelled transportation and non-polluting recreation. Pullens has been serving the Chico community since 1918 at 801 Main Street in downtown Chico and can be reached at 342-1055. And Square Deal Mattress Factory, building the best night's sleep since 1920. Square Deal is celebrating over 100 years of making mattresses, bedding, furniture, and now face masks with the fabric of your choice right here in Chico. Square Deal is located at 1354 Humboldt Avenue, For details, see squaredealmattress.com. Stay tuned. Ray will be with you, and you'll be having some great Grateful Dead. So hang in here for the... Whoa, not him. Let's see, how do I get rid of this gentleman? Hang on just a sec. So this has been Chris, the Peace and Justice Show. Be back with you next week. I have Tyler Rushing's dad on with me next week, so that should be an important show. So here is the community calendar.
Hey, listeners, it's time for the KZFR 90.1 FM community calendar with me, Megan Hammer. Come on out for an outdoor picnic and potluck dinner with your local Sierra Club, the Yahi Group. Everyone is invited. Meet new friends and old as we slowly begin to put the pandemic and the wildfires in the rearview mirror. Meet at 5 Mile in the group picnic area in Bidwell Park. Gather at 5 p.m. and dinner is at 5:30. Bring a dish to share, non-alcoholic beverage, and table service. If you have an event you'd like on the community calendar, let me know by sending us an email at cc@kzfr.org. This is the KZFR 90.1 FM community calendar.
All right, this is listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills and beyond, FM 90.1 KZFR Chico. It's Friday, 1 o'clock, and you know what that means? It's time for Playing Dead, and this is Bill. I'm taking my turn at the controls, and I actually have a guest with me today. His name is Bill as well. Came up from Sacramento to join us, and... Talking with Bill and hearing some music from the Grateful Dead recorded at the US Festival in 1982 in just a moment. But first, let me let you know about our underwriters like Jeep Trail Print Shop, a small, local Chico screen printer that loves great design, small businesses, musicians, educators, and creative customers. Jeep Trail